Court of Appeals, in and for the Seventh Judicial Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is United States against Vitcha. Mr. McGinnis.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Joe McGinnis. I represent the appellant. This case is a summary judgment. And from what I can see, there's really only one fact stipulated in the whole case. This man was in the Waffen-SS. He was in the Waffen-SS. Our evidence shows he was drafted. Back about 4.5 years ago, I presented the case to this court called United States versus Tichung, which was a collateral attack on the jurisdiction in a similar case. I would ask, that's fully briefed here in this case, and I would ask the court to revisit it. One of the things I'm asking the court in that respect is that it makes a number of statements, one being that Fedorenko forecloses a jurisdictional argument. I only want to focus on that because the Fedorenko case never deals with jurisdiction. It does not handle the matter at all. It simply goes through it. I've cited two cases, Hagens versus Levine and Will versus the Michigan Police. And in those two cases, what the Supreme Court is saying is that if there is no jurisdictional argument and decision, or we don't look at it, or sub silentio decide it, then we're not foreclosed from looking at it again. That's what I'm asking this court, to look at it again, because there isn't any foreclosure, or at least that's our position.
But the fundamental problem I have is the Fedorenko case, you know, is a situation that where citizenship was not illegally procured. And I think that creates a big problem for you.
Wait, Your Honor, I didn't understand the statement. Excuse me.
What I'm saying is the Fedorenko case, you know, how is your case different from Fedorenko? And all the other courts have held that we have jurisdiction to revoke citizenship in cases where the citizenship was illegally procured. I mean, the fact that he lied.
My client never, my client's not charged with lying.
Your client committed fraud.
Right. He didn't indicate the position that he held in the SS position that he held. That was not revealed. He didn't fill that out.
Your Honor, this is a one. They've only proceeded on one count here. They have not proceeded with summary judgment on the other counts. They only claim that he was in the Waffen-SS, and for that reason alone, he was ineligible for a visa.
Right.
Now, what I'm, but the question of disclosure or non-disclosure or a lie or a misrepresentation isn't the issue here. The issue is that he was not eligible to get a visa. That's what the OSI is asking the court to determine. You are to determine the consular officer's discretion to give or not to give him a visa. From that point on, the government moves on inference, and it says if he was not eligible for a visa, he was not lawfully admitted. Now you have to make a huge jump. That's actually an inferential jump. And it says this: if a man is not eligible for a visa, but nevertheless has a visa, is approved by the INS and enters the country, how then is he not lawfully admitted? Lawful admission is status. And I've cited the two statutes, the statutory definitions, and they tell you what lawful admission is. Lawful admission is the linchpin of OSI's theory of recovery here. It is that if he was not lawfully admitted, he did not have the requirement for citizenship 1427A, and therefore, he could not legally procure his citizenship. That's the concept of the idea. So when we move from visa eligibility If a person is not visa eligible, but nevertheless comes into the country, there is no logical correlation between ineligibility for a visa and lawful admission. Lawful admission is status.
Is there any argument that you are now making that you have not made unsuccessfully in earlier litigation?
Yeah, there are
new argument, perhaps.
Yes, there are several. Yes, there are several in there, Your Honor. One has to do with the curing of his status. Let us presume that he was not eligible for a visa. A year later, the Congress then passed a law and said only those people who were involuntarily in service, they don't come within the purview of Section 13. That was retroactive. It was there to cure status. And I cited to the court the case of the matter of M. Matter of M, which is the BIA case, it's the Attorney General's own concept of this. And what it is saying is, yes, if a man was involuntarily in the service, he was really not part of the ideology. In that case, it had been communism in the Russian army. In this case, a service in the Waffen-SF, if you claim that has something to do with Nazis. So in that respect, that is a new argument that's presented here. Actually, there are a lot of cases, things that are new, Judge. Each one of these cases is actually different. It may seem the same to the court because we have sort of a general facts pattern which kind of runs through everything. But they are different. Some are DPAs, some are 48 DPAs, some are 1950 DPAs, some are IROs. And this one happens to be a 1924 Act case. So they are not the same at all. Actually, some are 52 Act cases. You've had a few of those. So they are actually very different, although they kind of look at you and you think they are the same.
And in all of those cases, did the defendant indicate the position that they held in the Nazi party in the application?
Some they did. Your Honor,
And you don't think that's a fundamental problem?
Well, it's no fundamental problem at all. Our government had no objection to it at the time he entered. It had no objection to it at the time that he became a citizen. In the 1952 Act, he became a citizen. There was absolutely no bar to any Nazis or anybody. And there was to communism, but there was nothing to any Nazis. That's why you hear about all these Nazi war criminals coming in. Our Congress never barred it in 1952, and it wasn't until the Holtzman Amendment in 1978 that there was any objection to it. What you may think here, and what you see here, is something that is not really apparent. You may think that these people are Nazis hiding in neighborhoods and so forth. They really are not. These aren't even Germans. They're all people that were drafted into service. They were ordered to serve where they had to serve, and they were told to do what they did. A number of them didn't. They deserted and were shot. That's what Joe Witchie is. And he's a harmless sort of individual. And what we have here is you run a long line of cases, and then you think that this case is the same as those. It isn't. There's only one fact stipulated in this summary judgment, and that is he was in the Waffen-SS. OSI only moves on one count, and it says because he was in the Waffen-SS, he's not entitled to citizenship. And it was not entitled to visa entry, and that was it. I've got a white light here, Your Honor. I ask to reserve my 5 minutes, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. McGinnis. Mr. Mink.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. Jeffrey L. Mencken, United States Department of Justice for the Appellee. May it please the Court. Your Honor, this is the same jurisdictional argument that was rejected in Tit-Young. The Sixth Circuit rejected it in the Delita case. The Eighth Circuit rejected it in the Nagula case. Seven district courts have rejected it when made by defense counsel, and the argument is not improved through repetition. The question really becomes how many times counsel can repeat this argument and waste the resources of federal courts and the resources of my client. I do have a client, and I do hope that the answer is not more than seven.
Well, I always draw inferences that when somebody leads with an argument that has been rejected repeatedly everywhere it has been made, then he has no serious argument to make. And you should probably favor the making of such an argument when it leads judges to draw that inference.
I would not argue with that inference, Your Honor. As far as the membership in the Waffen-SS, that by itself was disqualifying. The evidence in the record shows that at the time Mr. Vitcha applied for his visa, service in the Waffen-SS by itself in any capacity was disqualifying per se, whether that service was voluntary or involuntary. We have State Department memos in the record that discuss that. And the rebuttal evidence, such as it is not evidence. It all comes well after Mr. Vitcha was admitted. Judge Conlon properly noted that it's not in effect at the time of entry, and therefore it doesn't control this case. And as we explain in our brief, even if it could have some conceivable theoretical application, it doesn't change anything, because the law cited by the defense didn't change the application to this defendant. Now, there was a lot of matters in the brief that were not discussed by counsel. I will address them if the court wishes to, but otherwise I don't know that it's necessary. But the fact, undisputed, or I should say unrebutted fact, is Mr. Vitcha served in the Waffen-SS. That made him ineligible to enter the United States. That meant that his citizenship was unlawfully procured. That's that. It's a very simple case. It's very straightforward, and it's really not any different from many other cases that this court has decided, from the Nagle case out of the Eighth Circuit, from many others. I would be happy to address any particular concerns that the court has. As I said, there was a large area that counsel did not address in his argument. I don't know that I need to address it now, and there's certainly nothing to rebut if neither of us are talking about it.
Doesn't look like there are any questions.
Well, I would just submit, Your Honor, that Judge Conlon got it right. I would ask that this court affirm the decision. There's one thing about revisiting Tit Young that I want to point out. First of all, in the Tit Young case, the D'Elia case, and the Nagle case, the Supreme Court was petitioned for cert. If there was an egregious, horrific error, certainly one would expect that they would revisit Fedorenko in that way.
You don't want to follow your performance with arguments that are in the teeth of settled law. The Supreme Court could not be clearer that denial of certiorari has no effect, and we are to draw no inferences from it.
Well, Your Honor, I would just point out,
you don't want to try to argue us to the contrary. That's not...
No, and that's not what I'm intending to do, Your Honor. But one thing that I would point out from the Tit Young decision, that where the court wrote on page 342, we have examined Tit Young's claims extensively, recognizing the gravity and the ramifications of our decision. Our exhaustive inspection leads us to conclude that those claims have no merit. I would stand on this court's statement in that regard. Unless there are any other questions, I would ask for an affirmance.
Thank you, Mr. Mangan.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Anything further, Mr. McGinnis?
I would only say this, that what I have demanded of this court, of OSI, and of the court, the lower court, too, is that the court have the statute that gives jurisdiction to redetermine visa eligibility. Where is the statute? Now, this is the demand.
I must say, I think you completely mischaracterized the problem in this case. There's only one remedy that's sought, and that's denaturalization. There is a statute giving the courts the jurisdiction to hear that. There's a separate statute giving the courts jurisdiction to hear all cases brought by the United States, of which this is one. So there are two statutes. There does not need to be a statute authorizing the hearing of antecedent issues. Think of a mail fraud prosecution. One of the basic questions in any mail fraud prosecution is whether the defendant has got the money by fraud or by voluntary agreement, which is to say contract. There's no federal statute authorizing federal courts to hear contract disputes where there's no diversity of citizenship, but we hear the antecedent question in order to decide whether there was mail fraud. This is what federal courts do day in and day out. That's why your position failed in Tit Young, and you don't grapple with that problem here.
The case law that I have cited to the court makes it clear that there is no jurisdiction to redetermine immigration. It is the subject of an exclusive executive function.
Yes, and the executive is here asking that your client's citizenship be revoked. No one is asking anybody to disagree with the executive branch, except you. You're the one asking us to disagree with the executive branch.
Well, I'm asking the court to consider that what the government has done in several cases is blow hot and cold. In the case I've cited, there is Gonzalez, the case that you probably remember. There they went to the 11th Circuit and said, we want the plaintiffs went to the 11th Circuit and said, we want the court to decide whether or not he can be admitted to this country. And it's more complex than that. The government was making at that time the same arguments that I am making here. So, in other words, it's switching. It is so unusual that the government would ask a federal court to redetermine something that is the executive's exclusive function. And that is precisely the jurisdictional question we have here. Knopf, which I've cited, Harsades, they're all saying the same thing. What the courts.
So do you think it would be impossible to prosecute somebody for, say, fraudulently obtaining a security clearance on the ground that whether you get a security clearance is within the scope of the executive branch's discretion, and therefore there could be no criminal prosecution for fraud in that process?
Well, first of all, I have to find out if there's a statute.
There is. There is okay. A federal statute authorizing the prosecution of all crimes against the United States.
Right.
As there is a federal statute authorizing jurisdiction in every case brought by the United States. Every case brought by the United States.
There is no doubt that it has denaturalization jurisdiction, Your Honor. What it does not have is to violate the separation of powers and to go into the exclusive executive act of admitting someone to this country. It's the lawful admission that this court is turning around, and that is precisely the question of jurisdiction that I present to this court. That's fully briefed.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. The court will take a brief recess before calling the second case this morning.